Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this podcast, we'll be featuring Aaron Jasper, and he'll be answering your most important questions on the evolution of nymphing. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Aaron a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address on the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Aaron Jasper about the evolution of nymphing. This segment of the show is brought to you by the Orvis Company, makers of fly rods in the USA since 1856, and still on the cutting edge with their award-winning Helios fly rods. Check out their premium quality flies like Copper Johns, Beadhead Princes, and Elk Hair Caddis for only $1.50 each at www.orvis.com/flies. That's www.orvis.com/flies. And fill your fly box this season at an incredible price. So find out more about the great fly fishing products Orvis has at www.orvis.com. Before we introduce Aaron, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For a drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine. So you have two chances to win in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, which is at askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Aaron's section that says, click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We will also be giving away a copy of Aaron Jasper's DVD, European Nymphing Techniques and Fly Tying. You're going to really want to win this tonight based upon the content of the show, so pay attention. Here's how you're going to be able to win. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show, and the question is going to be about something we talked about during the show. You got to submit your answer along with your name and location in the text box on our homepage. So listen closely and use your best typing skills, and maybe you'll win Aaron's DVD on European nymphing techniques. Tonight, our guest is Aaron Jasper. Aaron fishes an average of 200 to 250 days a year and has been fly fishing since the age of 7. Aaron has been fortunate to fish some of the greatest trout streams around the country, fishing extensively in the eastern United States, as well as traveling across the country to experience some of the very best fly fishing available out west. As a result of his travels, Aaron has learned many techniques, flies and rigs that have enabled him to constantly grow and improve as a fisherman. In recent years, thanks to his very close friend, Davy Wooten, Aaron has become a true student of many European nymphing techniques and other methods of trout fishing, along with traditional style wet fly fishing. Aaron has become a great source of European nymphing knowledge, and Aaron has always been happy to demonstrate a variety of Euro nymphing techniques, from short leader Polish and Czech methods to longer leader Spanish and French techniques. Well, this style of fishing is an investment to learn, is very often unequaled in its fish catching potential. In 2007, along with his friend web designer Justin Massimo, Aaron founded Trout Predator Online, a fly fishing community specifically aimed at disseminating and sharing good information about fly fishing techniques and destinations. Since then, the community has grown to over 2,600 members and is home to some of the best information on the web about Euro nymphing. Aaron and Justin produce multiple short videos every month on everything from fly tying tutorials and tips to short destination adventure videos, and all can be found on their website, including information on European nymphing techniques. Well, Aaron, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Thanks for that introduction, Roger. A little on there.
Well, you are the man when we're talking about European nymphing, so I know everybody's going to be excited about this tonight and ready, willing, and able to learn from you. So
there's a lot of guys that know about this, but, yeah. You know, I, I'm fortunate to be a school teacher, so I get to fish after school, on vacation, during the summer. I get out there a lot, so.
Yeah. Well, that's what it takes, really, though, doesn't it?
Yes. Time equals learning.
Yeah. So we've got lots to cover tonight. A lot of good questions came in from our listeners, as always, and thankful for that. Let's just start at the beginning. We titled the show Evolution and Nymphing because nymphing has changed throughout the decades here quite significantly. And so why don't you explain what your view of the evolution of nymphing is and where did it all start and where are we now?
Well, I think it's very interesting how, you know, we have all this modern tackle and, you know, all these different things that are at our disposal that they didn't have 50, 60, 70 years ago when all this was started with Frank Sawyer fishing with a simple, you know, copper wire pheasant tail nymph. And then George Harvey and Joe Humphreys, you know, pioneering nymphing in the United States and actually making an acceptable form of fly fishing. And I think that guys like that always get forgotten, you know, that they've made great contributions to our sport, you know, and all of us started off, you know, nymph fishing those styles. But I think that now that we're, you know, figuring out all these new things and refining it and with the competition, I think that, you know, that we've forgotten that it has gone through this big evolutionary stage where, you know, we fished with split shot, you know, just two nymphs, and then we went to strike indicator nymphing. That was like the neat thing for a while. And now we're on to this European nymphing. You know, and the funny thing was, you know, is that I was at a show this winter, you know, one of Chuck Farinsky's fly fishing shows, and I was talking to George Daniel, and we're talking to each other, and we're sitting there like, you know, like, this has gone, you know, from, you know, what Joe Humphreys did to what we're doing now with all this very sophisticated, like, fly setups and fly weights. In only, you know, 6 or 7 years here in the United States. Like, it's amazing how far it's gone in such a short period of time. And we actually sit there wondering, like, how is it going to go any further? Like, we're both very excited to figure out, like, what's going to be the next thing that's going to jump the sport, you know, and make this even more precise. And make, you know, nymph fishing more effective. Because, you know, there's always going to be somebody making it better. That's one thing I've learned. There's always somebody out there that has something that you don't have that's going to throw it out there and, you know, throw the game in a different direction. But for right now, it just seems that these, you know, techniques that have been driven out of, you know, competitive fishing have turned the nymphing game into something much different and has added another facet. And by facet, I mean just another way to nymph. Like, I'm never going to say that it's not right to fish the other ways of nymph fishing. I'm just going to say that in some situations, in some instances, the European styles and the way that they've done it with the competition, even for the average guy, is a more effective way to fish. And at the end of the day, you know, the average guy, you know, doesn't get a lot of time, free time to fish. They have to work. You know, with the economy being slow, like, their time on the stream is less. So what happens when they're on the stream is more important. So, you know, if they're catching fish and, you know, being successful because they learn something new, it allows them to have more fun fly fishing and hopefully furthers the sport by then having more enjoyment and hopefully bringing other people into fly fishing. So that's, you know, what my hope is, actually, like, to get people into it. Because it's something that I've done since I was a young child, and I really love to do. And what I want to do is instill that in people that I meet, you know, even on stream on a daily basis.
Sure.
I want to install that, like, enjoyment that I have. And I think that understanding the evolution is the only way to do that.
Well, now, you brought up, you mentioned several times in the past couple of minutes, competition.
Yes.
Is that really how this idea of European nymphing came to the U.S.? Was it out of the national competitions where we were just getting beat, and then we recognized that and started using it here?
Yes. And in my opinion, that is exactly how it got here. Now, you know, I had this friend Michael, and he's a very good fisherman, and, you know, he fished some of the Polish nymphing methods because he's from Poland, and that's what he did. But as you know, he's not somebody that's at the forefront of this, that's bringing the information to the public. He was like kind of like a hidden person, like he's kind of like my, you know, resource. But you know, it's the competitive anglers in this country, like a George Daniel or a Lance Egan or a Pete Erickson or you know Devin Olsen. Those are the people that are bringing this to the average angler and teaching them how to do it so that they can have more success and have more enjoyment on the stream. So yes, yeah, it always takes a number of times of losing in order to realize that you need to get better at something. It's just human nature, I think, you know, like we always tend to think that our way is the best way, but the only way to really learn that our way isn't the best way is to suffer some amount of defeat. So you kind of have to lose some battles to win some.
And that defeat could come in a number of ways. It could be just standing next to your buddy on the stream and he's doing better than you, and you say, what are you doing?
Yeah, yeah, like, what are you doing?
You learned something, yeah. But it was interesting because a lot of people were kind of down on the competitive side of the international fly fishing competitions, but there has been a lot of technology and techniques that have come out of those competitions that everybody's using now.
Yes, you know, if people are allowed to go to their favorite pool all the time and fish their favorite flies all the time and just do the same thing all the time, they're going to have the same amount of success. They're never, ever going to really test themselves out. They're in a comfort, you know, zone. And when you get in a comfort zone, you tend to stop learning. So what the competitive side of things does, in my opinion, you know, I've done a little bit of competition fishing. What it's done is it makes you get out of your comfort zone and comfort level, and it makes you raise the bar. And that's where I think that, like, the innovation comes from, that raising the bar. Like, you know, you're fishing against other anglers that are very skilled, so you need to adjust your game. Like, I know that if I go out fishing with one of my friends, like my friend Bob, for example, I'll use him as, like, you know, the scapegoat. If I go fishing with Bob, like, I know that you can put one arm behind my back, I can probably stand on one leg and get more fish. But, like, fishing against, you know, people like, you know, when I went to the national championship, like George Daniel, you know, I'll say all the names, you know, like Lance Egan, Devin Olsen, you know, Norman McTeam, another one. Like, those guys made me elevate my game in order not to embarrass myself. So I think that competitive fishing is definitely something that's very good, even for the average angler.
Okay. Yeah. Now, Bill in New Jersey asks, and because we're going to talk about some traditional nymphing techniques here and then the Euro nymphing techniques tonight, and we're going to jump right into that right after this question, but he asks, would it be best to learn all the various nymphing techniques? Do you think that's an advantage on the stream, or do you maybe just jump to the Euro techniques? If you're a new fly fisher, you know, where do you begin?
Well, if I'm a new fly fisherman, and I just wanted to catch a lot of fish, and, you know, like, I fished an average stream, you know, let's say, like, you know, we'll call our average trout stream, what, like 15 to 30 feet in width? With some riffled and pocket water, wouldn't you say that's the average stream I just described?
Yeah.
I think that it would be best to start with, like, a short leader, like a Czech or a Polish, you know, European-style technique, because it's very easy to learn. It's simple. The design of a leader is simple. The flies, it's simple to select the flies. The strike detection's really easy, okay? Now, about learning all the different techniques, if you go to a river like, let's say, like the Bighorn or the West Branch of the Delaware, where the river is huge and expansive, it's better to indicate a nymph there. So there's a time and a place for everything. And I think that it's the guy that knows the most about all the different techniques is the one who's more successful on a daily basis, because he's able to match the right technique to the conditions that are going on. So, like, let's say you went to the West Branch of the Delaware, you know, it's a river, you know, I'll draw a mental picture for listeners. It's a river that's about, you know, 150 to 200 feet wide. Many of the riffles in this river are low gradient, which means generally shallow, and the fish are spread out. So if you were to fish a method like a Joe Humphrey style method where you can fish maybe 15, 20 feet, that's your range, or a check nymph, you know, system, which is like 15 to 20 feet foot range at the most, or even a long leader European style setup, you're still very limited. That's where I would use, like, you know, either a dry dropper or an indicator. So it's all about learning as much as you can. And that's, like, one of my favorite things about fly fishing is that every time you're out there, you learn something new.
Yeah, yeah.
So
sure. I mean, it's a lifelong learning process.
Yes, it is a lifelong. You know, those fish, even when you think you have them figured out and you go to the stream, you know, you get out of the car, you high-five your buddy, and you're like, yeah, we're going to catch a lot. You go to the stream, and you're like, oh, boy, what happened? What happened between the car and the stream? Well, the fish. You know, the X factor is the fish, and that's what the most exciting thing is. You know, there's something between us and the fish called water, and then the fish does their own thing, so it makes it more exciting. You learn all the time. But to get back to the question, yes, like, it is best to know something about every single type of nymph fishing so that you can match that to the type of water that you're fishing to be more successful.
Okay, great, great. Okay, let's dive into some of the, these are questions that I believe I sorted out and grouped together under the traditional nymphing techniques, non-Euro, so to speak,
yep.
That people sent in. This one comes from quite a ways away, David Hemmings in Tasmania, Australia.
That's far.
they got some great trout fishing there, that's for sure. What's your opinion on super impressionistic nymphs versus the old shaggy silhouette style? And he says in a Spring Creek situation or bigger rivers, lakes, so forth. But I guess he's looking at, you know, does one work better than the other? Do you tend to lean one way or the other?
Well, I mean, I would group both of those nymphs together if I had to. You know, super impressionistic and shaggy silhouette styled nymphs are the same. Now, the one thing I would like to, you know, add to this that he might not think about is that if you're fishing in a Spring Creek situation, I think he might want a more realistic type nymph.
Maybe that's like what he's talking about. Is instead of impressionistic, maybe he meant realistic.
Okay, yeah. Like, you know, in a Spring Creek, you know, situation, I would definitely want a more realistic nymph. You know, first of all, like in Spring Creek, the food source, you know, in the majority of the Spring Creeks that we know, you know, like, you know, let's take the ones in Montana, because I can't comment on the ones in Tasmania. You know, they have blueing olives, they have sulfurs, they have midges. The fish know exactly what they are, they know what they look like, they know the size, you know, they're very, very into what the food base is. So when I went fishing to Armstrong Spring Creek, I made sure that I had PMD nymphs that looked like PMD nymphs, where if you put both of them together, you wouldn't be able to, you know, tell a difference. So in that situation in a Spring Creek, I would say that you would definitely want a very, very realistic looking nymph. Okay? Now, on a bigger river, it depends. Okay? I'm taking a trip to France and at the end of June. And there's some larger rivers in France, like one river is the Aisne, I believe is the name of it. And I would definitely want a realistic nymph in that river. The river is about 6 to 8 inches deep on average, and the fish sit in that water and they feed all day on emerging mayfly nymphs. And that's the type of situation where you would want a realistic-looking nymph. Now, if I went fishing to the same larger river and the water was high and muddy, I might want something extremely impressionistic, even something going as far as something with, like, a hot spot or a bead that, you know, is fluorescent in color to attract fish. So I would base my fly selection, whether it's impressionistic or realistic, based on water color, you know, based on the water conditions. Now, about lakes, that one can go either way, because I went fishing with a friend, Simon Gosworth, in Hebgen Lake, and we did very, very well on both impressionistic and realistic flies. So in a lake, it would depend. Those fish in lakes where I fished, they tend to be very, very moody in nature. Some days they want a very realistic fly. Some days they want one with flash. Some days they want one that's really buggy with no flash. So basically, with, you know, as far as the first two, the Spring Creeks and the bigger rivers, it's much more easier than it is to figure out what's going on in the lake. Like, I found lakes to be some of the hardest fishing I've ever seen. Because you not only have to deal with, like, you know, water the fish, but you also have to deal with depth and distance that they can move. For example, like in a river, we know if we're fishing in pocket water, there's trout there. In a lake, you could be sitting in a lake that's 100 acres wide, you know, like in distance, with a boat in the middle, and the fish could be 100 acres away. But in a trout stream, it makes it easier because we can locate the fish.
Yeah.
So lakes are kind of tough. But in a lake, it's a day-to-day thing, I've noticed.
Right.
That's my experience.
Well, we need to take a quick break here, Aaron, and when we come back, we'll be talking more with Aaron Jasper about the evolution of nymphing. Cortland Line Company recognizes the rapidly expanding market for the precise nymphing methods pioneered by the European competitive angling community. Czech, French, and Spanish nymphing styles increase productivity by keeping anglers in close contact with their flies. Extra long, light action rods and unique rigging are the rule for this type of fishing, but standard taper floating lines are often a hindrance. Cortland Line has been developing, testing, and perfecting the ultimate taper configuration to empower nymph fishermen using these new methods, and our new competition nymph line is finally ready for release. Look for the competition nymph line to be available this summer from Cortland. Your nymph rod has met its match. For more information on Cortland Lines, visit www.cortlandline.com. That's www.cortlandline.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Aaron Jasper about the evolution of nymphing. If you'd like to ask Aaron a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, Aaron, I know after that ad that we just had from Cortland that we'll have to talk about that in a little bit when we get to European nymphing to see what you have to say about that. But for right now, tell us about what's going on in your fly fishing world. What are you up to, both commercially or environmentally, or what's on your plate right now?
Oh my God, almost too much some days it seems. The recent DVD that we released on the European nymphing has been a tremendous success. Actually, more than we thought it would be. Been very fortunate to have some articles published lately and been writing some more, so that occupies a lot of my time. Of course my little first graders occupy a great amount of my time, But actually that's probably my most favorite thing to do is to teach those kids how to read. But they also think it's pretty neat that their teacher does things like this. But as far as the fly fishing thing, like the guide business has done very well. I mean, I never thought that I would be booked into, for almost through the whole summer by the, before the spring even started, and that's what happened. And we've already started making our second DVD, and that's proving to be a tremendous task. I'm looking to get more involved with some conservation-oriented projects closer to home, like my home river, the South Branch. I want to, make sure that stays good and doesn't get destroyed. So there's a few different organizations I want to get involved with. And there's also another one, the Pequannock River Coalition. This guy, Ross Kushner, known him forever. That's one river that I'm really going to, hone in. And it's, it's very close to my house, and it's full of wild trout. And would you believe they reduced the flow of this river to 7 CFS during the hot summers?
Oh, my gosh.
So that's something that we're really going to work on. Yeah.
Well, now this DVD you have, where can people get that DVD on European Nymphing?
You can get the DVD on our own store, which is I can't believe someone else didn't buy this domain name, EuropeanNymphing.com. So if you type in EuropeanNymphing.com, the store is there. You can watch the trailer. The DVD actually fell into place. I was very lucky. A friend of mine, Alex Gomez, Alejandro Gomez, a childhood friend of mine, I met him at the Board of Education in Patterson. I had to go fill out some paperwork. He said he did a little filming. Well, a little filming turned into a lot of filming. He's done stuff for Time Life. He's done stuff for almost everybody. It's been on TV, he's done a lot. And then I have another friend of mine, Taylor Vavra. he's an editor in the city. Like, all the Macy's TV commercials that you see, he edits them. And I know most of the listeners have seen the dancing coaches commercial on March Madness. Maybe you've seen that, Roger. Have you seen that one?
Sure, yeah.
Where the coaches are going crazy? He's the one who edited that. So we have a really good team. We have a guy, you know, teaching the fishing. We have somebody doing the editing. And we have, you know, the best of, you know, what I think, the best of all worlds.
Yeah.
You know, we have the teacher, we have the editor, we have the filmer. And it works out great.
So to get the DVD, they go to EuropeanNymphing.com, and then the other place for them to learn more about European Nymphing is TroutPredator.com. Is that correct?
Yes, TroutPredator.com. Now, if some people have looked at Trout Predator, like, you know, when I did my last broadcast, like 2 years ago, when they see the new one, they're going to be like, oh, my God, Justin, which is, you know, my partner in the business, did an unbelievable job of redesigning the whole website. Like, you know, it's really professional looking. I'm really proud of him.
Great.
He did
great.
A great job. You know, I'm just really lucky to be surrounded by a great group of individuals that really are good, loyal friends, which is
great.
Very important.
Great. Well, let's get back to talking about some of these nymphing techniques. Thanks for sharing what's going on in your world, and we appreciate that. Martin Coleman in Lawrence, Kansas asks, what's your favorite rigging for nymphing on an average-sized river? What are some tips to picking the right weighted fly or adding weight to get them to drift correctly? And with this question, because of what you said before, we really, when he says average-sized river, that's kind of the big X factor here too, right? Is what is an average-sized river?
That is amazing. That is a very, very large X factor. Now, I thought of a way to answer this. It depends. And, you know, Martin, I'm going to answer your question like this. If the average river has, you know, very gradual depth changes, and there's not, you know, there's not a lot of pocket water where you have, you know, pits where the water can go from 6 inches to 3 feet, back up to 6 inches and so forth, and then deep again, I would indicate a nymph for a dry dropper, that type situation. You know, I would not want to fish with weighted flies, you know, in a river where I have little to no depth change. I would want to indicate a nymph at water. Because in that type of stream where you don't have really, really, you know, a lot of depth changes, you don't have a lot of structure in the stream. And without a lot of structure in the stream, you can't really tell where the fish are. Now, you know, the fish could be spread out the whole general area. Now, if I'm going to fish a stream where there's a lot of boulders and pocket water and current seams, I'm going to use, you know, long line euro nymphing, because I can, you know, I'm very confident that as long as the fish are within, you know, 25 to 30 feet of my position, I can catch them. So, to answer his question, it would be two different ways. Like, I can't pick one way to do something. And as you said, you know, an average-sized river, that's a pretty difficult answer. Because somebody that lives in, you know, Idaho might think that Henry's Fork is the average-sized river.
Right.
And somebody that lives in Pennsylvania might think that Spring Creek or Penn's Creek is the average-sized river. So, it would have to do a lot with, you know, the bottom structure of the river of how I would nymph.
Yeah, I think you explained that really well. Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, like, for guys in the east, west branch of the Delaware, I think of that as an indicator nymphing river. Mm-hmm. All right? You know, a gorge-type stream or someplace like the Madison, you know, you could look at that. You could see that there's tons of features in the river. There's a European nymphing river. You know, it's a heaven for that stuff.
Right.
There's, you know, there's lots of pockets, there's lots of areas where you can throw your fly and be pretty confident that a fish is going to be there to meet it.
Okay. So, another question here we have from Garrett in Wilmington, Delaware. He says, Aaron, can you talk about a bit about dry dropper? How do you set up? Is this something you use only during hatches, low flows, or some other time?
I would say that dry dropper is a setup that I use a lot on, you know, in Spring Creek scenarios, where I don't think I can get very close to the fish. for example, you know, there's a river called the Latour. It's the kind of place where, you know, you look at it and you go, you know what, I'm not going to fish here. This is too hard. And I've found that dry dropper at that particular place there, and there's another one, Falling Springs, and in Montana, this is another Spring Creek. It works really well at. It's definitely a very, you know, for me, it's a very specific, you know, situational technique. All right, now about how I would set it up, it would depend. You know, I don't like to fish heavy nymphs when I fish dry dropper, because I think that if I can use a heavier nymph, then I could nymph in different ways. Like, I could either uronymph for the fish, or I can indicator nymph. So when I dry dropper fish, I'm trying to be as stealthy as possible, which I wrote an article on American Angler in the last issue. I think it was the March-April issue that explains that, you know, dry dropper is a very good technique to use in a Spring Creek situation, in the low water, you know, or in a, you know, freestone river situation where the river is really, really low and the trout are very spooky and you can't get near them. And about rigging up, I you know, for dry flies, I like to use real dry flies. Like, I'm not a big foam guy. I like to, you know, for dry dropper, the three, you know, my three favorite dry dropper flies are actually in that article. I love the Clinkhammer. It's a caddis. I love, you know, we call it the hair decator. Guy John Anderson, he manages Ramsey Outdoor. He came up with a hair's ear that you can see from literally a mile away. It floats like a cork and can hold up a bunch of, a couple small nymphs. And I really like to use a CDC caddis. So those are three flies that can catch fish. So when I'm fishing dry dropper, Garrett, I'm not trying to sacrifice a fly. Like, I want to catch fish on my dry fly as well. And then as far as after the dry fly, I like to use one or two nymphs. If I'm going to fish in water that's 18 inches or less, or I'm fishing to fish that are underneath the surface feeding, I'm going to rig up about 20 inches to one nymph below my dry fly. But if I'm going to fish in a situation where I'm going to be searching out and trying to catch fish over a broad area, like let's say I'm making multiple casts upstream in a small stream, I'm generally going to fish two small nymphs in that situation, because the water is generally going to be low and the water is going to be clear and the fish are going to be highly pressured. So to answer your question, you know, I during hatches, I would go at one nymph and try to fish in that specific spot of the water column. And low flows, I would fish from a distance with two flies. And about the some other time part, you know, if I think that I can use larger nymphs, I'm going to nymph in different ways. Mm-hmm. So I hope that answers that question.
Okay, good. This is kind of a lengthy question, but it gives us a little history, and I don't know whether you know anything about this or not, but I'll throw it out there anyway, and we'll see. Maybe other people know something about this as well. But Jim in Jefferson City, Missouri, writes, a couple of years ago when Mike Lawson came down to speak to us at the Heart of America Fly Fishers event in Kansas City, he told us that he considers Missouri the strike indicator capital of the world. He then explained by saying that in the past, every time a new type of strike indicator would come along, without fail, he would later find out that it originated in Ozarks. Missouri does not get mentioned much in the national fly fishing books or magazines, so I was wondering if during your research you became aware of Missouri's role in the development of strike indicators. And so that's one question. He says, floating strike indicators that could be used to present a weighted offering at a precise depth of the water column, but the fly rod originated here in Missouri Ozarks, and commercial versions were sold locally as early as 1961. So I guess his question is, were you aware of that, and were you aware of the role that they played down there, or you know, does it even exist?
No. You know what? From fishing with Davey down there, and, well, all right.
Davey Wooten.
Davey Wooten. You know, Jim, I'll be perfectly honest, I didn't know that it originated there. However, after reading what you wrote, I know why it originated there, because of the types of water that you have. You guys have those shutdown flows where the water gets really, really low, and down south, they love to fish jigs. That is one thing that I have noticed. So it's very important, you know, if you're going to fish a jig under an indicator, that you need to put that jig at a certain depth. And jigs are very important, you know, down there. When they have the shad kills, they catch a lot of fish on white marabou jigs. I know that for a fact. And also, down south, one thing about those rivers is they're like giant trenches. There's not a lot of bottom structure changes. So they're able to fish indicator rigs very easily and not get snagged up on the bottom. Like, when I went fishing with Davey, you know, we fished at Bull Shoals Dam quite a bit. And we made drifts, you know, I don't know, half a mile long without pulling our lines out of the water. Because you never get hung up. So indicator nymphing in those types of situations down there would be the best. So I can totally see how it would have started there. But I'm going to say this. I can guarantee you that the strike indicator started because they were watching the spin guys catching tons of trout on jigs under bobbers. I guarantee you that that's, if you did a little bit more research, I'm sure you would find out that it definitely started by watching a spin fishing guy catching a lot of fish on a jig.
I think the other thing is indicator fishing has always been easier for guides to teach new fly fishers, seemingly. You know, it's something they can row the boat and watch at the same time. And,
yep.
You know, so it was a matter of ease of teaching at certain points, too. We've got Mark Johnson in Michigan. He wants to know, again, talking about indicator fishing, how far apart do you place the indicator in the first and second nymph? I never know if I'm deep enough or too deep. Also, what weight device do you like, and where do you place them in your favorite setup?
Well, I'll go over this pretty quick. There's going to be another article that goes into depth in this in American Angler in the next issue. So, Mark, you definitely want to be on the lookout for that one. But we're going to go really quick through this. All right. About how far apart would you place the indicator and the first and second nymph? Mark, I want you to think about when you indicate a nymph, you know, what's bringing the flies to the bottom? Split shot. So the most important thing when you're indicator nymphing is how far is your indicator from your split shot? That's the most important thing. Because once you figure that out and you get that depth right, then your flies are going to drift at the correct weight on the bottom for the, you know, for the best ability to detect strikes. So what I'm looking for when I nymph is, A, I want to see that my strike indicator is drifting slower than the current, because I want my split shot on the bottom. This is one of the few times that I actually want my stuff on the bottom. I want my split shot on the bottom. I want to see the indicator pausing and hesitating. I want to see it moving slower than the current, okay? And about flies, all right, I don't like to use weighted flies when I indicator nymph. I like to use flies that are unweighted. Only because, you have to remember one thing, trout have eyes on the top of their heads. So, if you're fishing for a fish with an eye on the top of its head, why would you put your fly below the fish? So, if you're indicator nymphing with split shot, and then you're using a weighted fly, that weighted fly is below the fish. So the fish doesn't see it. And in fast water, it's critical that the fish sees your fly coming. And about the distance between the two flies, I like to use 20 inches. And that's only because that's about the, you know, biggest fish I hope to catch that day. And we all know that if a fish, you know, rolls up in your flies, you know, if you have them less than 20 inches apart, we all know that the fish, eventually you lose it. It gets hung up, it gets twisted up. So I think that rigging your flies 20 inches apart from each other stops you from having a multitude of problems. And going back to the first part about your question, I like to have at least a 45-degree angle from my indicator to my split shot. So that means that I have to make my distance between the indicator and the split shot in my average riffle, in an average spot, 1.5 to 2 times the depth of the water that you're going to be fishing. I like to have a little bit more angle between my indicator and the split shot than the average person does. And I think a lot of that comes from learning about the Euro nymphing and the strike detection. I want my weights to be going as slow as possible, and so that I know that my flies are directly behind my weights. Because if you think about it, sometimes when you're indicator nymphing, one of the problems of indicator nymphing is that you don't always know where your flies are, because they're drifting freely behind the weight. But by changing the distances and slowing everything down, you can keep your flies in a straight line behind the split shot and not have them drifting side to side. So I hope that answers your question, Jim. But check out the next issue of American Angler, and you'll see all the specifics of the rigging and the setups and some of the explanations in there.
Terrific, terrific. No, very good explanation, Aaron. Next question from Rick in Southeast Pennsylvania. He says, hey, Aaron, can you talk about fly size, color hotspot, and setup rigging with water conditions and seasons? I'm not quite sure if that's specific enough for you, but do you have any comments for him?
Well, you know, fly size, it could be anything. It depends on the river that you fish. Let's put it like this. If I'm fishing a river that has stoneflies, of course I'm going to use a fly that imitates a stonefly nymph. So, you know, my big fly could be anywhere from a size 4 to a size 10, depending on the time of the year. And, Rick, I don't know if you know this, but stoneflies are a three-generation insect, you know, a three-year life cycle insect. So they're not like most of our two to three years. They're not like most of our mayflies where, you know, like a Hendrickson, for example, they're hatching now. So we know that they're going to hatch now during the summer. The nymphs are going to be like a size 20. In another, you know, couple months, the nymphs are going to be a 16, and then a 14, then a 12, and they're going to hatch. So a stonefly, you have multiple broods of the same stonefly. So a golden stonefly in a stream, you could have size 10, you could have size 4. So my first thing about fly size, I would choose the largest fly in the water that the fish could eat and use that for one of the hot spots. I'm looking at the question. Use that for one of the flies. And then for a second fly, I would either pick a mayfly or a caddisfly species, generally, and I would pick that depending on the type of water that I'm fishing. If I'm fishing a very fast, well-oxygenated riffle, I'm going to use a caddis larva because it's scientifically proven that caddis larva, that's prime habitat for caddisfly larva. If I'm fishing in a more gentle riffle, or where, you know, a riffle leads into a pool, I might use a mayfly nymph as my second fly. And about hot spots, you know, a lot of guys think that hot spots, you know, are just meant for stocked fish. Hot spots, you know, attract fish. Fish can see, you know, the color orange and red very well. And one other myth that people think is, you know, and Roger, I'm sure you can agree, you've heard this a million times, you know, fish don't see red, right? You know, because it's absorbed in the water column by the light, right?
Right.
Well, trout have a chemical in their eye, you know, that allows them to see red. So trout are hypersensitive to red. So about the hot spots, you know, my favorite hot spots would be red, fluorescent yellow, and fluorescent orange. Those are the three that I like the most. And about the flies, you know, like that's what I would use. And for rigging, water condition and seasons, you know, in the winter, I find that sometimes, you know, bigger flies do catch the fish. And you catch bigger fish during the winter because you got to think, the bigger fish need to eat more. So they're more opportunistic in the winter. And in the spring, I find that I can catch fish on a, you know, larger variety of flies. Like, I know that I can go fishing tomorrow after work and use almost whatever fly I want and catch fish. Because they're, you know, like, it's feeding time. You know, there's lots of insects, you know, moving around. There's hatching going on. The fish are literally going crazy. But in the winter, I would be a little bit more, you know, specific in my approach. I would use larger stoneflies. I'd use larger food items. Because you're fishing for fish that are very opportunistic, and they want to feed. And you will catch a lot more big fish in the winter. So I hope that answers your question.
Good, good. Well, we need to take another quick break, but when we return, Aaron will be talking to us more about nymphing techniques, both traditional and European. So stick with us. Housatonic River Outfitters offers the finest in fly fishing products in Connecticut and fly fishing guides on the Housatonic, Farmington, and other waters. You have the option of wade fishing trips or drifting the river with their guides. In addition to the spectacular trout fishing, they offer guided fly fishing trips and spin fishing trips for warm water species. Please tour their website at www.dryflies.com to view the fishing products and guide services they offer in Connecticut and Massachusetts. They were the first fly shop in Connecticut to offer drift boat guide services and have the largest established guide service in New England. To learn more about Housatonic River Outfitters, visit www.dryflies.com. That's www.dryflies.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Aaron Jasper about the evolution of nymphing. If you'd like to ask Aaron a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to ask your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. A couple questions did come in here, Aaron, off the Internet, so let me throw a couple of these at you. We've got Stan in Eagle River. He says, is there a best time of day for nymph fishing, and does it matter if there is a hatch?
A hatch or not?
Yep.
You know what? No, it doesn't. And for nymph fishing, the only time of the year, well, there's two times of the year that I would say that there's the best time to nymph fish. And that's the winter, and obviously it's the warmest part of the day. You know, you don't want to be out there in the winter time freezing. You know, it's not comfortable, and the fish aren't active. So I would fish, you know, from 11 to 3 in the winter time, and during the summer. There's a phenomena called behavioral drift, and that's when, you know, the insects of the stream decide to dislodge themselves from the rocks, you know, where they're eating, and move to another place. And that happens during periods of low light. And during the summer, that happens in the morning and the evenings. So that's why you do very, very well during those time periods. But in the spring, you have the behavioral drift in the morning, which creates excellent fishing opportunities. Then you have the hatching activity during the midday in the spring, you know, usually. And then you have behavioral drift again. So during the spring and the fall, you have a similar scenario as the spring. So during the spring and fall, there is no bad time to nymph fish. And in the summer and the winter, it's funny. It's almost opposite. In the winter, middle of the day, summer, opposite ends of the day. That's usually the best.
Okay. We have a question from Jesus in Spain, so other side of the world. And he was asking about size nymphs. I think you've covered that. But he was asking, what's the best rig for fishing zones in pools and currents where you can't approach? So I guess hard to approach pools and currents.
Hard to approach pools and currents. You know what? Dry dropper. Okay. If it's tough, it's dry dropper. I almost laugh saying that. You know, I do a lot of talks, and, you know, guys are always like, oh, you know, there's these fish that are tough to catch, dry dropper. Because dry dropper allows you to get into position, take your time. You know where the fish are, generally. You know, if you know that it's hard, it's because you've been there already. And you've tried to catch those fish, and you've been unsuccessful. So, dry dropper allows you to, you know, take your time, you know, set the line up, get the nymphs at the right depth. You know, in the article, I recommended that you went 20 inches to the first nymph, 20 inches to the second nymph. Now, if you're fishing in a very clear pool, which I don't, you know, in Spain, I know that the water's clear and the fish are very difficult to catch. A friend of mine, Danny Marino, fished world championships in Portugal. So I'm guessing that the rivers are very much the same. And Danny said that there were places where dry dropper was the only way you could catch those fish. It was impossible to catch them in other ways. So I might not have fished where he has fished, but I can, you know, explain to him some of the reasons why based upon what someone else told me. So what they were doing with dry dropper is they were going, you know, 36 inches, 3 feet to the first fly, and then 3 feet to the second fly, so they could catch those difficult fish in pools. So that's something that he might want to try. He might want to try rigging up differently than he normally does so that he can have success. So try dry dropper, but don't think of it as something where you're only fishing that nymph 20 inches below the dry fly. Think of it as like a way to suspend those nymphs to catch those hard-to-catch fish in difficult places.
Okay. Well, let's jump to and start talking about European nymphing techniques, because I know everybody wants to
talk it about. Is a lot of questions. Yeah.
So let's kind of move ahead to that. Let me open this up by just asking, we've got Czech, we've got Polish, Spanish, French. Why so many names, and are they all really different from one another? Maybe you could briefly explain the differences, and then we can kind of dig into the detail.
All right. Czech and Polish, you know, very, very similar. Short leader, okay? French, all right, and Spanish, they, you know, you can use the same leader for both because the design of the leader is the same. The way that you're presenting the flies is different. You know, the French nymphing is more of an upstream presentation. So, you know, a lot of us here in America fish dry flies upstream, you know, at around 30 feet, give or take. And it's a very exciting way to fish. You see the fish take the flies. It's very exciting. Now, the French have done the same thing, but they do it with nymphs. Okay? So, basically, it's upstream fishing with two nymphs. Upstream dry fly fishing with two nymphs. Now, the Spanish nymphing is a little bit different because the rivers they're fishing tend to be deeper. So, you know, as a child, I did fish with bait. You know, I'll admit it. I can handle it. You know, it's very similar to that. And in the DVD, it goes in to explain. It's an up and across presentation. The flies, you know, you cast up 45 degrees. It's like a little Tupperware bowl. The flies go into the water, they descend to the bottom, and you know, you extend your arm, and as the flies get to the end of the drift, they come right back up, and then you recast them, and you do it again. So it's very similar to how you would fish worms, but you're using a fly, okay? But the French nymphing is, in my opinion, the most effective of all of them. It's the most finesse way to catch trout on nymphs that I've ever seen. And I probably use French nymphing if you want to divide my nymphing time up, you know, into like 100, you know, into a pie chart with percentages, I would say that I probably French nymph 70% of the time and I Spanish nymph the other 30% of the time. That's how effective those two techniques are. And what's very interesting is the same leader you use for the French nymphing, same leader you can use for Spanish nymphing. So it's very versatile, okay? And the Czech and the Polish nymphing are very, very similar to the way that Joe Humphreys fishes, because Joe Humphreys, you know, Vlady Trzebunia, you know, he's famous Polish guy, won the world championship. He fished with Joe Humphreys a lot when they were developing all this stuff. So it was developed at the same time. So it's almost hand in hand. It's very similar. But, you know, I tell people at my classes that as long as you can fish within 30 feet of you and you're fishing in water where you know the fish are, there's seams, there's pockets, there's, you know, there's current definition, there's definition on the surface and it tells you where the fish are, the French and Spanish, the long leader nymphing, are the ways to go. So we are a little bit different, you know, but it just gives credit, you know, because, I mean, no one can say that they invented anything, but it gives credit to the countries where it comes from, and giving credit to where something came from is very, very important. And I think that sometimes we forget that, but that's the main reason for naming it under each country. Plus also for people who fly fish, you know. Like, let's say, there's a group of us, and we, you know, we're nymphing, and I'm like, oh, French nymphing's working really well today. They know that I'm always fishing upstream of my position. So they know how I'm fishing. So it kind of explains how you're doing it. So that kind of answers the next question, too, the differences.
Right. Let's dig into that French a little bit more.
Okay.
That is one of your favorites. Let's talk about number one. What is, you say, you know, the leader style. Talk about the leader style, the setup there. You know, how you rig up, and then more specifically, how you fish that.
All right. When you French nymph, it's a long leader. And another funny thing is, you know, I went to a talk last week, you know, like a lot of guys fish Henry's Fork of the Snake. They fish the Silver Creek in Idaho, very tough trout. They fish the Delaware. They use 15 to 18 foot leaders to dry fly fish. Now, I don't understand why they wouldn't do the same thing to nymph fish. So, you know, when you limp, you know, when I'm French limping, my leader is around 18 feet because that's the legal length for the fly fishing zones in Pennsylvania where I fish a lot. So I'm using a heavy butt section that's about 7 feet long. And then after that, I'm using something called a cider, which is brightly colored monofilament. And right now, there's only one place that has it, and it's in Europe, and there's heavy fly fishing tax on it. And I mean, the price is outrageous, but it's one of those things you have to have, you know. It's a bright piece of leader in the middle, and then it's straight tippet off of the cider to the flies. So what that does is it cuts down on the tippet drag. And a lot of guys don't think about that. Like, there's a lot of drag on that leader that's in the water. Like, if you're nymphing with a traditional leader, if you just tie your nymphs on, you might have, 14 thousandths of an inch, or almost 20 thousandths of an inch, leader going through the water, and that pulls on the split shot, causing you to need more weight to get to the bottom. So the French nymphing is very interesting because they're nymphing with a lot of 6, 7, 8X. So it doesn't take much to get your flies to the bottom, okay? So, and then now we'll get to the presentation. So now you have your leader, you have the fly line, you're all set up, okay? And it's a regular cast, like you're fly fishing. You make a 10 o'clock cast, you go back to 10 o'clock, you go ahead to 2 o'clock, and as soon as your flies hit the water, you keep the rod up, because a lot of times you get the take as soon as the flies hit the water, all right? Like, Roger, have you ever watched bass fishing tournaments?
Sure, yeah.
They use poppers, right? They use fluorescent lures. They make fish react, okay? When you're French nymphing, you're making the fish react because you're not making a very long cast. You throw your flies in the water. You make a short 3-foot drift. You go back and you make another cast, and then you represent your flies in the next likely-looking spot. So what you're doing is you're making multiple casts in an area before you move upstream, trying to elicit a reaction out of the fish. So instead of, trying to make the fish bite because, oh, I hope they, I hope they were going to eat my blooming olive drive, nymph, or I hope they're going to eat my sulfur nymph, it's like, no, I'm going to make them eat that fly because I'm going to attract them. And that's why you see, like, those fluorescent colors in the flies, like the hot spots and the beads, because they're trying to draw attention to the fly. Because as we all know, trout are very curious creatures. They eat anything. They want to try it out. And the best part is they don't have hands. So where are they going to put the food source? In their mouth. And one thing, when you're French nymphing, as soon as the cast is made, the rod's already coming back. So if a fish takes your fly, all you do is accelerate the rod coming back, and you set the hook, and you're right into the fish. So everything's moving in a natural way, so if a fish takes your fly, you're ready to set the hook and catch the fish. So that's kind of why it's fly fishing. Like, it's pure fly fishing, French nymphing. That's why I like it the most.
Now, are you sight fishing the fish at this time, or are you more doing searching with this?
Well, that depends on where I'm fishing. If I'm fishing, during a hatch, and there's a fish sitting on the edge of the current seam, and I see him, I'm going to sight nymph to him. And luckily, with the French nymphing, you use one or two nymphs. So if I'm going to sight nymph to a fish, excuse me, I have to cough, I'll generally use one fly. All right, because I don't want to confuse that fish. I want to watch the fish. I want to see it move. I want to see its mouth open up. I want to see its head shake. And also, another thing is, if you're sight nymphing, generally you're sight nymphing in shallower water. So if you're using two nymphs, you might hang up the bottom. But most of the time when I'm French nymphing, I'm going through stretches of pocket water that aren't too deep. So I'm going to use two flies to help the other one get to the bottom. So, it all depends on where I'm trying to catch that fish. If I'm fishing for that fish and it's in shallow water, I'm going to go with one fly. If I'm fishing for that fish in deeper water, I'm going to use two flies.
Okay, now, are these flies weighted?
Yes, the flies are weighted. They're all weighted.
And then, so now that we know the French, how does the Spanish differ from that?
Well, The Spanish differs in the fact that it allows you to fish very deep water. You're using the same rig, The only difference is I might lengthen my tippet after the fighter so that I can fish in deeper water. When you're fishing the French style, I'm generally using 4 to 5 feet to my first fly of, you know, 7 to 5X. Now, what I do when I'm Spanish sniffing is I change it up and I go a little bit longer. So I might use even 8 feet to my first fly so that I can fish in deeper water and make a longer cast. Because remember, when you're French sniffing, you're fishing upstream. So the flies are naturally getting carried down to the bottom by the velocity of the surface currents in the water. Now, when I'm Spanish sniffing, I'm casting out further. So I'm going to lengthen that tippet so that when I make that cast, the flies stay where I cast them. So if I were to keep the same amount of distance, when my flies sink, they would eventually sink and they would be close to me. So when I Spanish nymph, I nymph and I make my tippet a little bit longer so that when I make the cast, let's say I'm casting, you know, 25 feet out, my flies stay 25 feet out, they drift down the stream, they stay in a straight line. And that's the best way to cover that water that's deep. You want to get your flies down, like we spoke about with the Tupperware container. That's what I tell all the clients that I take out, is to think about it like a Tupperware container. You throw the flies in, they sink, and at the end of the drift, they come back up, and you pick them out. So when you fish in the Spanish style, you know, same thing, 45 degrees upstream, the flies sink, they get to the bottom, they stay on the bottom, and then they come off the bottom, and you lift them up, and then make your cast. So that would explain how you would fish in the Spanish style.
And when we're talking about these long leader techniques, Spanish and French, What is the technical reason for having such a long leader? Is to keep less fly line out of the water? Why are we doing that?
Well, yes. If you take your average fly line, you know, a heavily weighted weight forward fly line, and you take that and you cast that out with those longer leaders, you will have a hinge out of your rod because of the weight of the head of the line will cause you to miss strikes. So, you know, I guess now we're going to get into the fly line that we designed, right? Like if you have a line, like let's say, you know, you have a really heavily weight forward line, like, you know, something like a any of the high performance lines. Alright, first of all, they tend to be too slick a lot of times. They're very thick. You know, they slide through the guides. You know, when your flies are presented, the first thing when you're fishing these techniques is you don't want the fly line to slide around. You want the fly line to stay put in the guides. You want a very limp line. High performance lines generally are not limp. The cores of the line are meant to cast far. Okay? They stretch, they're stiff, they're very, very geared towards high performance, dry fly fishing, you know, casting long lines for indicator nymphing. That's what they're designed for. They're not designed for this. When you fish these techniques, you want a very limp line, and you want a line that's very, very, you know, very, very, very thin in diameter. You don't want a line that's thick, but even though the line is thin, it can still be weighted. There's technology to weight the line. So actually, when I was at the show, you know, the people at Corwin, they approached me and they said, you know, like, let's design something. You know, there's a lot of interest in this. Let's make a line that'll allow people to use fly line. You know, I almost can't stand it, you know, when you hear people knocking these techniques because you're not using fly line. You should be using fly line. Because, you know, the only way to turn these flies over is to use fly line. I don't work at Cortland, is what we've done as a group is figured out a way to take older technology fly line, like this silk line, the core, and use some of the newer technology to give the line a better coating and make the fly line light and limp in the guides, So that you can not only handle the fly line well when it's in the guides, but the line will also cast. And the coating is one of their newest coatings, so the coating is not going to come off the line quick at all. And we're going to work on some other products for some other things, because spun out of making the EuroNymph lines has come some unbelievable things by putting our brains together. They gave Joe over at Cortland the go-ahead on anything. You know, like get going on all the projects. So the EuroNymph line that's coming out is going to be its own animal. No one's seen anything like this. It's taking older technology that's been forgotten about almost and making it something that's new. It's pretty interesting. So just wait for that one to come out. You will not be disappointed.
I take it you've fished the prototype, huh?
I fished the prototype. You know, it's really funny because people think that when you fish these techniques that you want to have a running line on because you want to be fishing all mono. That's not the, that's the furthest thing from the truth. These techniques are fly fishing. You want to have a fly line. But the only thing is that when you fish like your standard fly line, it doesn't behave the way you want it to fish these methods. So what we've done is we've made a fly line that's not only going to be able to cast, but it's going to be able to fish these methods perfectly. I've tested the line out for hundreds of hours, and I can tell you that anybody that's doing this, and we're all guys, we love to fly fish, we're gear junkies. This is going to be something that is going to it's going to raise the bar. Because one thing I know is that when I used to fish longer leaders, because I thought you had to fish longer leaders because I hated using fly line, I could never cast small flies long distances. With the prototypes that we have, I'm now casting flies that are size 14, 16, and 18. I'm casting them 30, 40 feet. Because now I'm able to use fly line, whereas, a year ago, I couldn't use fly line, so I didn't have the distance. So what you're going to see now is these techniques are going to become even more versatile because you're going to be able to put fly line into play, which is something that really hasn't been addressed at all to this point.
Yeah.
So there's some very interesting stuff coming down the pike.
Well, we need to take another quick break, Aaron. We'll let you get a glass of water here. And
yeah, right?
And we'll be right back. Have you ever dreamed about the classic actions of bamboo fly rods? Did you know that it's possible to make your own bamboo fly rods? With the help of Power Fibers online magazine, you can do just that. Power Fibers is a magazine dedicated to making bamboo fly rods and telling the stories about bamboo through the ages. From rod making techniques to stories about fishing bamboo rods to rod maker profiles to classic papers, Power Fibers has it all. Visit our website at www.powerfibers.com. That's www.powerfibers.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Aaron Jasper about the evolution of nymphing. If you'd like to ask Aaron a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, Aaron, you back with us?
Yeah, I got a soda now. Not a Diet Coke, but it's a regular Coke.
Okay. Well, you could probably have a beer at this point in the show. We wouldn't care, You're going to make it through, so. There's a couple questions here. One from Mike in Pennsylvania, and he's talking about line. He says, what fly line should I use for European nymphing? Well, you just answered that. There's one coming out. My line seems to be too heavy at the tip, and it drags my presentation back towards me.
This one won't.
this one won't. So this kind of cures its problem, huh?
Yes, yes. I'm sorry, I said again. That was one of the major problems of using a standard, fly line, was that it did drag the presentation back towards you. So this line, what we did is we made it thinner and it's weighted so that that's not going to happen. You're going to see that the weight is distributed. We're going to have one that's 135 grains or 140. I can't remember the number offhand. It's going to be for light nymphing. And then we're going to have one for heavy nymphing. So what we did is we not only said screw 2, 3, 4, 5 weights, because, now all our rods can handle any line pretty much. We're going by grain weights with this. So we're going with a 140 grain line, and we're going with one 130 to 540 grain. Sorry, it's one of the two. And the second one's going to be 165. So the 135, 140 grain line is going to be perfect for a 2 and 3 weight setup, and the 165 grain line is going to be great for a 4 and 5 weight rod. So we're kind of doing away with the line weights because it's not necessary to have 4 different lines for this type of fishing. And, you know, and with the economy, too, we decided to get rid of, you know, 3, 4, 5. It'll confuse people. So we're going to make it light nymphing and heavy nymphing. So we're going to make it easier on people. You know, there's enough stuff to learn. Why make, you know, choosing the line a hard thing to do? Let's make something easy for a change.
Okay, we've got Abe in New York City. He asks, do you change the weight of your flies as you move into different current speeds and depths? And how can I know what is the right speed for my flies when I'm longline nymphing?
Well, one thing that when you're fishing the European styles of nymphing is that instead of changing the weights of your flies and the split shots, all you do is change the rod angle. You lift the rod high to bring the flies through the drift, or you keep the rod low to bring the flies through the drift. So there's actually less changing going on. Whereas with other nymphing methods, you have to adjust the split shot, then you have to adjust the indicator. So one of the things that I like about it is there's so many less adjustments. And when people learn these things and they've seen it in the DVD, they go, wow, you fished with the same nymph and all those different water types. All you did was change the angle of the rod, and the flies fished totally differently. And they're like, wow, that's something that's pretty easy for us to learn because I don't have to sit there and change and fix things all the time anymore. Because, you know, like, face it, guys hate it when they have to, you know, gauge the split shot they need to put on and change the setup every 2 seconds. When you're Euro nymphing, like, you know, long leader, you're using the same flies almost the entire day. The only thing that happens is, you know, you sacrifice some of them to the trees, fish's mouths, and the bottom, but what can you do? So it's actually pretty stripped down, I would think, as compared to other methods.
Okay. We've got a couple of questions. Here's from Alan in New England. Asks, what type of patterns do you use for a typical anchor fly?
All right. Actually, you know what's funny? He has his Allen Stonefly. That's one of our favorite flies to use still to this day.
Ah.
He's a very good fly tie. I actually know Alan. But the flies that we use, I actually really, really like the Drone Stone. That was the one that you saw. It was on the cover of Fly Tire in the summer of 2010. I fished the Farmington a lot, and there's a high population of stoneflies, and I guided there, I think, every day of the month of July. And I also like the rubber legs. So what happened was I like the rubber legs. I like the woven part of Allen Stonefly. So I threw the rubber legs in there with the Allen Stonefly, and I put the wing cases from the Mike Mercer Stonefly in there, and bang, came in the Drone Stone out. I also like the halfback. That's a very, very old fly, all right? Rubber leg stonefly is an excellent anchor fly. Woven larva are an excellent anchor fly. Crane fly larvae are found everywhere. Fox squirrel nymph, you know, we have to give some credit to the guys who originated a lot of this stuff. The fox squirrel nymph works great as an anchor fly. So, you know, I for anchors, I wouldn't have 35 anchor flies in my box. I would pick like 10 that are my favorite. And I also like the Prince nymph because it's the Prince nymph, and the Prince nymph's been around forever, and you can't beat it. So to answer that question, you know, the Allen Stonefly works pretty well, but there's a bunch of other ones that can have their moments.
Okay. Frank in New York wants to know, what's a typical, how long is a typical cast when you're doing Euro nymphing methods?
From 15 to 25 feet is okay. The typical cast.
All right. And then we've got Bob in Connecticut. He says, Aaron, I have your DVD, and it is the Bible of Euro nymphing. Great job. My question is, with the construction constructed French leader you showed in the DVD. Mine seems to catch in the guides, making it hard to recast. What can I do to prevent this? Please don't say practice your blood knots.
Oh, yeah. Yes, practice your... I actually, what you need to do is cut them closer to the actual knot. Another thing I'd recommend is lean knot sense. You know, put a little bit of that. Put a little bit of that on the knot. Shine the UV light on it, and play around with it in your hand. That'll make the knot much smoother and easier to go through the guides. That'll solve that problem.
Good deal. Okay, Chris in New York says, asks, why do you use such thin tippet when you are French nymphing? How do you turn over those large anchor flies with 6X or 7X tippet?
Well, I wish there was a group of people here so we could talk about this, but if you think about it, right, you know, 6 years ago, 6X tippet used to be what breaking strength? 2-pound test, maybe? Right? Now, 6X... the breaking strength on 6X is 3.6, 3.8, depending on the brand. It's almost the same breaking strength as 5X. Alright? And 7X is 2.7 on some of the higher grade fluorocarbons. So basically, you're using 5 and 6X tippet. Now, with the French nymphing, the one thing is you're not using heavier anchor flies. You're using lighter flies. So you're not having any trouble turning the flies over because you're using lighter flies. You're not using the heavier flies that you would think you would need to be using to get to the bottom. And when you start these techniques, I always tell people it's best to start with flies that are really, really heavy and then lighten them up as you get better at it. So, for example, like you would go make a fly with a, you know, 5/32nd bead, a big tungsten bead, lead wire wraps, you know, and then off of that, tie whatever fly you like to use. Start with that. Use 5X tippet, heavy tippet, and then fish. But as you get better, you're going to lighten your flies up, and that's going to allow you to lighten up the tippet. So for the French nymphing, some of those guys are even using 9X tippet. So they're at a whole other level than we are. Thank God that we don't need to use 9X tippet on our streams. I'm dreading the day that that happened, you know, that's going to happen, but I think I'm going to see that one in my lifetime. But yeah, you know, if you think about it, like the tippets that we have are much, much more advanced than the tippets that we have had, you know, 5-6 years ago, and that goes back to the evolution of fly fishing. Everything's evolving. The tackle's evolving. The techniques are evolving. You know, even the tippet's evolving, you know, and I hate to say it, but, you know, but let's go back to the bass fishing thing. The monofilaments and, you know, the tippets that we have to dry fly fish, the monofilament, that's only getting better because bass fishing, you know, they need to drop shot. They need to use lighter tippet because they're catching more bass. So we're lucking out and we're catching the end of that because, you know, our leaders are getting better because the bass fishermen need better leaders. So we benefit more from competitive fishing again, not just competitive fly fishing. Competitive bass fishing benefits the average fly fisherman.
Sure.
So,
okay, we've got one from Rod in Portland, Oregon. He says, thanks for sharing your knowledge on your site, Trout Predator. It's really helped me to understand more about Euro techniques. I was curious if you could run through a typical multi-fly rig for the Czech-Polish nymph setup, anchor fly, point fly, and wet fly, and how long your dropper tag lengths are.
Alright, my typical short leader nymph rig will be 5 feet of butt section, okay, and generally 3 feet of 21,000 inch, and then I'm going to go 2 feet of 15,000 inch, and then to that, you can use a micro ring, you can use a Davy Watton knot connection, which is on the DVD in slow motion, that's filmed on there, to my tippet, because when you're fishing in close range, you want your butt section, you know, and you'll see that, you know, it's in the DVD too, and, you know, and you can look online on YouTube and see videos. Your leader's going to enter the water, but you don't want the butt section to enter the water. You want the tippet to enter the water, okay? So then, so we're past the terminal tackle. Now, let's go to the flies, all right? Now, my anchor fly, It depends. In the winter, if I'm fishing in the winter and the water's cold, I'm going to put my anchor fly on the dropper, and I'm going to put my lighter fly on the point fly. Now, if there's hatching insects, I'll definitely fish a wet fly or a soft hackle fly in the dropper position, because the fish are freely feeding throughout the water column, taking emerging insects, and a wet fly or a soft tackle does exactly that. It imitates an emerging insect very well. So it just depends on what the water temperatures are and what the fish are doing as to how I'm going to rig. And 4 to 6 inches is about what you want to have for your dropper tags. You don't want to have them too long, because you're going to get mad at yourself and get disgusted because they're going to tangle up. And when they get too short, you know, you want to retie your whole leader and fix it, you know. Because I believe that, you know, being properly rigged and not, you know, half doing it is a major key to success.
Mm-hmm. Great, great. Well, we got a couple more things here, two more questions, and we're going to wrap it up here. Mike in Worcester, Massachusetts, says, Aaron, we've met a few times in the Farmington River in Connecticut. My question for you is, I was wondering if you could speak specifically to the situation in which you caught that 28-inch monster on the Farmington. Like, how you spotted her. I remember you said you saw her in the run above Ovation, I believe, and how you approached fishing to her rig fly selection and so forth. Is that the fish we got a picture of you with?
No, that's another one.
Another monster, huh?
It's called Buck. No, you know what it is, Roger? You know, like, you know, the more you're out there, the more it's going to happen, you know? And, I mean, on that one at the Farmington, I would call that a lot of luck. Because my friend Tony is, like, the most incessant nice fisherman you're ever going to see. And he had that fish hooked. And he's like, I saw that fin, like, looking at me, like, waving. And the fish came off the line. But, yeah, like, the fish was, started off at Ovation, and that's where Tony saw it. And I actually caught it below there, which shows us the fish move. Now, one interesting thing I'd like to talk about, if you think about 28-inch fish, right? A lot of people fish the Farmington with streamers, and they don't catch anything that size. Now, trout, you know, In the beginning of my lecture, I always talk about the average trout that we try to catch. You know, they're sitting there waiting for things to happen. So, they are not predatory, you know, like, they're not predators. Every trout is not a predator. When they get larger, they become predatory. But, they always have that instinct in them to feed on insects. And I think that a reason why we see a lot of big fish caught on nymphs is simply because they mess up. You know, like, that big fish messed up. It took, you know, a Polish woven nymph in the middle of a riffle during a Hendrickson hatch, because it was in that riffle feeding on Hendrickson nymphs and just decided to try out the woven nymph. So, you know, I kind of got lucky on that one, but I'd rather be lucky than good sometimes. And it's funny, when I hooked that fish, I thought it was like 20-something inches, and I'm like playing it, you know, I'm like really like ripping on it, like getting it in. And then I got it close to me, and I'm like, whoa. But yeah, you know, that fish, I never would have caught that fish on an indicator rig. It would have been an impossibility. It was in water only a foot deep. I saw the fish's mouth opening up. Yeah, like, I was watching, you know, I didn't see the whole fish, I saw the mouth, and I was like, wow, that's one big mouth, bigger than mine. So, and I just, you know, and I said, you know what, all right, I'm throwing it in there. So, I flipped my flies across the stream, made the cast, I had the rod up, I saw the mouth shut, and then all the flashing started, and the jumping started, and, you know, all hell broke
loose.
Game
on, huh?
Game on, yeah. And thank God I got him in the net, you know, and I had people there to take pictures of him. So I was really, really lucky.
Yeah.
But I see he wanted a rig, you know, and, you know, how I approached the fish. I made sure that I was downstream of the fish, because trout, as we know, they, you know, eyes on top of their head, their field of vision, they don't see very well behind them. And that's another reason why French netting works, because you're standing behind the fish. Fish don't know that you're there. Right? And about the rig, I had a long leader on with the cider, with the curly cider, And the fly selection, I had a Frenchie on, which would imitate the emerging Hendricksons. It's basically just a pheasant tail at a hot spot. And that was it. It was, the leader I had on that day was actually very, very crude. That was 3 years ago, I think I caught that one. So, you don't always need the best, rig or the best, tackle to catch the fish, but you need to be set up right to detect the strikes. And that's what these techniques do, is they are better at detecting strikes. You don't miss the fish. You have instant strike detection. For example, we talked a lot about the sighter. Let's call an indicator, because let's be honest, we call, a strike indicator, but it's really a bobber. But for European nymphing, they call it a sighter. Well, it's really an indicator. There's nothing in between your sighter and the flies that's going to hinder your strike detection. So if the fish grabs your, dropper fly, as soon as the fish takes the dropper fly, you see the bite in the sighter. As soon as the fish takes the anchor fly, you see the bite. So it's all about detecting the strikes. And that's what these techniques do. And when they're done to perfection and done well, you can detect almost 100% of the strikes. And I firmly believe that even if you're doing it at half proficiency, you're going to catch more fish than you've ever had. And you're going to have fun. But I got to warn you, you're going to be tying those tungsten-weighted flies and, it's going to get crazy. And you're going to want to fish more, and that's what it's about. It's about wanting to take more trips to the stream. So,
well, that's a great story, and also we learned a few techniques here to end the show on. But unfortunately, we got to wrap things up here. We've already run over time, Aaron, and we didn't get to all the questions, but we did our best.
Well, can I answer one more? I can get 30 seconds. What resources are out there, books, DVDs, and schools for learning some of the long, the techniques, okay? I have a DVD out that you can get at europeannymphing.com. George Daniel, he's coming, he's team, he's fly fish for Team USA. He's going to have a book out in January, so there's going to be two resources that everybody that's going to try this out needs to have. That DVD and his book.
And we're just doing an interview with George.
Yep.
About the time that book comes out. So look forward to that. We've already got that set up. So
that's going to be a good book. George is very knowledgeable. And schools, I know that George does classes through TCO Fly Shop. And I do clinics, I'm doing one at the Beaverkill Angler. I do classes all over the place. And I'm pretty sure Devin Olson, Lance Egan, and Brett Bishop, and all the other Team USA guys, that they do classes as well. So they would be excellent resources for people to learn this from.
Right. Great. Great. Well, thanks for sharing that. Well, stick with us, folks. We're going to give away a few prizes here, including Aaron's DVD on European nymphing and fly tying. So stick with us here a few more minutes, and we'll do just that. The American Museum of Fly Fishing in Manchester, Vermont, is celebrating its opening of a new groundbreaking exhibition, A Graceful Rise, with a week-long event on June 11th and 12th. The event features discussions, demos, displays, and casting workshops hosted by some of the most significant women in the sport of fly fishing, including Joan Wolfe, Fanny Krieger, Laurie Ann Murphy, Diane Rudolph, and many more. A complete schedule is available at www.amff.com. That's www.amff.com. And this event is sponsored by the Orvis Company, so check that out if you're in that area. Just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave our website tonight, make sure you take a minute to give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, what did you think of this show? Just click on the link, leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. Well, it's time to give away the prizes, and the first two we're going to give away are a one-year subscription to, or membership to, the Federation of Fly Fishers. Now, these The winners from these are randomly drawn from our show's registration database. If you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for our next show so you don't miss out on a chance to win some of these prizes. If you are the lucky winner, we'll contact you after the show and provide you with information on how to receive your gift, and so we can get that delivered to you. So the first thing we're giving away, a one-year membership to Federation of Fly Fishers. And to learn more about the Federation, go to fedflyfishers.org. FedFlyFishers.org, a great organization to be a member of and an organization to support. So our winner there is, and I'm not going to try your last name, but your first name is Phineas in California. Phineas, California, you just won a one-year membership to the Federation. If you're already a member, we'll get that extended for you, but congratulations. And now we'll give away a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine, which you can learn more about at flyfusionmag.com, flyfusionmag.com. Great magazine out of Calgary, Canada. And our winner there is Bill Corder from Georgia. So congratulations, Bill and Phineas, for playing with us tonight and winning those prizes. Well, now we're going to give away Aaron's DVD, European Nymphing Techniques and Fly Tying, and since most of you won't win it, as Aaron said, you can get it at europeannymphing.com and get your copy there. So this is, and I've been doing this more often here, Aaron, as I make a two-part question because it just seems like my questions are too easy. So this is going to be a two-part question. One has to do with traditional nymphing techniques. One has to do with Euro nymphing techniques. So the first part of the question is, when Aaron was talking about indicator nymphing, he said that he usually has how many inches between flies, how many inches between flies, and then name one of the anchor flies that he mentioned. Just name one of them, and so give me that measurement and one of the anchor flies, and you just got his DVD. So let's see what we got here, Aaron. And, okay, I'm going to read this to you. You tell me if this qualifies or not. He says 20 inches between flies. That's correct, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, but this, he says, for the anchor fly, he has clinkhammer, hair decator, CDC caddis.
Oh, those are dry dropper ones. You got them on that one.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, Charlie.
You got them.
Sorry, Charlie. Okay, you got half of it right. How about 20 inches and a woven nymph?
20 inches and a woven nymph. That's good. We'll give that one to him.
Okay.
You got it.
That's Dean Wormel in Westford, Massachusetts, up in your neck of the woods there. So, Dean, congratulations on winning that, and I know you'll enjoy it and put it to good use. So, Dean Wormel, send us your information, either in the same text box, your mailing information, mailing address and so forth, and email address, so that we can have Aaron send that to you directly. Congrats. So, that's terrific. All right. Thanks, Aaron, for being on the show tonight again, joining us again. And if you haven't listened to Aaron's first show, you might want to look that one up in our archive because we did one on European nymphing there, too. And it seems like there's still more to talk about, Aaron, isn't there?
Oh, you know, yeah. There's a lot. Like George and I always say, you know, the best part is that we're still really learning all this stuff. It's, you know, it's pretty cool to be learning something new, you know, and to be so young, you know, I'm 34. I might look like I'm 54. The kid said I'm an old man at school today, so I felt kind of bad, you know. And he's much better looking and taller, so he looks a little younger. But he said that, you know, it's very interesting that we're still really learning this stuff,
yeah.
And that, you know, like we're bringing it to the people. So it's very exciting to do that.
To be a part of it, yeah.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
Thanks a lot for joining us and spending your valuable time with us. Appreciate it. Our next podcast will be on May 18th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and on that show we'll interview Frank Wood, and our topic for the show will be lake trout on the fly. Frank Witt has been on a personal quest to catch and land a lake trout on the fly that weighs over 15 pounds. Well, he's far exceeded his goal and has brought fish in at 22 pounds on conventional fly tackle. Learn how he gets hooked up with these monsters on our next show. We'd like to thank Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, the Orvis Company, Cortland Line Company, Housatonic River Outfitters, and Power Fibers Online Magazine for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. We'll be happy to explain the options available to you. That's 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.